What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Get everything for your next project today at Menards and save big money. Keep your walls and trim protected while you paint with Scotch Blue Painter's Tape. It's designed for use on multiple surfaces and can be removed easily without leaving residue behind. Save big on Scotch Blue Painter's Tape from Menards. Also, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and check out all of our great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Every year, 9 billion chickens are killed in the United States. 9 billion. And that is more than 16 times the number of cows, pigs, and laying hens. So it's a massive, massive industry. So when Mercy for Animals is evaluating our priorities and our corporate work, working with companies on broiler chicken policies is so critical because one policy from one company has the potential to impact many thousands, if not millions, of lives of animals over the years.
You are listening to Veggie Doctor Radio, and this is episode number 215. Welcome to Veggie Doctor Radio. I am your host, Dr. Yami, board-certified pediatrician, certified lifestyle medicine physician, certified health and wellness coach, author, speaker, mother, wife, and human being. I passionately believe in the power of diet, habits, and mindset in sparking and sustaining well-being and joy in our lives. This podcast combines expert interviews and thoughtful monologues to explore plant-based nutrition, lifestyle medicine, parenting, mindset, and other exciting and fun topics. I hope that these episodes inspire you, uplift you, and equip you with the knowledge and tools to live your best life. Are you ready to get started? Let's do it. Happy Sunday, veggie lovers. Welcome to another episode of Veggie Doctor Radio. Today, I speak with Jennifer Bear, who is a corporate relations specialist at Mercy for Animals. It's a really interesting conversation. And definitely some of the stuff I probably don't talk about enough on the podcast. And I hope that you will stick around and listen to it because it's lots of great information. So like I said, Jennifer Bear is corporate relations at Mercy for Animals. And she works with companies throughout the food industry to implement a set of welfare standards for broiler chickens, the Better Chicken Commitment. Mercy for Animals recently published their first ever Count Your Chickens report, which examines which companies are demonstrating progress toward their promised welfare improvements for chickens. So I wanted to also tell you what Mercy for Animals is quickly. In the podcast episode, Jennifer also talks about Mercy for Animals, but quote, Mercy for Animals exists to end one of the greatest causes of suffering on the planet, the exploitation of animals for food, in particular, industrial animal agriculture, aquaculture, and fishing. These forms of food production cause egregious animal suffering and have detrimental effects on the planet and people. Mercy for Animals is dedicated to eradicating this cruel food system and replacing it with one that is not just kind to animals, but essential for the future of our planet and all those who share it. Mercy for Animals is a 501c3 nonprofit organization and is highly recognized as one of the world's most effective charities working to end the exploitation of animals for food. So in this episode, we talk about what Mercy for Animals is, what kind of work that they do. We also talk about Jennifer's vegan journey and how she ended up working in the animal advocacy arena. We talk a lot about the Count Your Chickens report, what it is, how you can find it, talk about factory farms, and how she views companies as far as their practices, whether they're humane or not, the best thing and the worst thing or the hardest thing about doing the work that she does, and a little bit more about how you, if you're not already plant-based, can start making changes to eat more plants and less animals. And don't worry, you don't have to go overnight vegan. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. If that is not the right way for you, then that's not the way to do it. Little by little is the way that some people go, and that's fine. So I think you're really gonna like this episode. It's a great conversation, and you'll probably learn some statistics you haven't ever heard before, and they may be a little bit shocking. So I really appreciate you tuning into this episode and every week. Thank you so much, my loyal listeners. I love you so much. And now, without further ado, here is Jennifer Bear of Mercy for Animals. Jennifer Bear, welcome to Veggie Doctor Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very excited to be here.
I have to say that I have been a supporter of Mercy for Animals for years, a long time, maybe even a decade, because I've been vegan now. It'll be 11 years next month. So I found Mercy for Animals pretty early on, and I love the work that you're doing, but I'm excited to learn even more about this organization. So tell me more about what is Mercy for Animals and what work does this organization do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being a supporter. And yeah, happy to talk a little bit more about the organization. So Mercy for Animals is the world's largest international farmed animal protection organization. And we are on a mission to change our food system to be one that is more sustainable, more compassionate, and more just for everybody. And a major part of that mission is moving away from industrialized animal agriculture, which is so prevalent nowadays, and moving more towards a plant-based food system that relies more heavily on plant-based and vegan eating. And we have operations here in the United States, as well as Canada, Mexico, Brazil, and India. And I would say something that is very notable about Mercy for Animals is that we take a very multifaceted approach to our mission. So, for example, we have various teams who work on different aspects of our mission. So, for example, we have teams who work on public engagement, so really educating the general public at large about why farmed animal welfare is so important and why there's such a need for improvements there, as well as the multitude of benefits of plant-based eating for your health, for the planet, and of course for the animals. We have teams who do amazing undercover investigative work, both on farms and in slaughterhouses. That is, you know, extremely impactful when we're talking about educating the public about what really goes on behind the scenes in these industries. We also have a corporate relations team, which is actually the team that I am currently working on. And the work that we do on this team is very exciting because we actually have the ability to collaborate with major companies all throughout the food industry to establish really meaningful animal welfare policies that have a very wide-reaching impact on the number of animals that they're able to have an impact on without in the food industry. We also, within our corporate affairs team, work to expand the variety and accessibility of plant-based food options throughout the restaurant industry. So we're a very busy organization, but it's a wonderful, wonderful place to work. And I really, really do believe in the mission and what we're doing.
I love it. That's a lot of different things. I'm curious, especially since you work in the corporate affairs piece of the organization, what are the attitudes of leadership in some of these organizations, these companies that raise animals for food when they're approached by an organization like Mercy for Animals? Is there a lot of defensiveness and just like, trying to justify things, or Do people seem open to it and acknowledge that, yeah, we don't necessarily want to do it this way. This is just the way it's been done. What do you usually encounter?
It really runs the gambit, but I would say that, you know, I've been working in corporate relations throughout the animal protection movement for, you know, many years now. And I am optimistic in that in many of the conversations that I have with companies, there really is a bit of a reckoning that, you know, companies are interested in establishing these higher welfare policies and also expanding their offerings of plant-based options, not just because it's something that Mercy for Animals wants them to do, but because it's something that consumers want them to do. I mean, companies really are aware that consumers are demanding a wider variety of plant-based and vegan options, but also for consumers who do choose to consume animal products for whatever reason, that they really do care about the welfare of farmed animals and that they want them to, you know, hopefully at the very minimum, eliminate some of the cruelest practices in factory farming. And I want to be very clear about that, you know, at Mercy for Animals, and, you know, we can talk about the specifics of the changes that we're advocating for later on, but we are really trying to focus on eliminating the cruelest practices that are so rampant throughout animal agriculture. That is really our mission when it comes to working with these corporations on their welfare policies.
Yeah. And that's such important work. I know that there's so many different perspectives when it comes to animal advocacy and the people that are just like, no, we must flat out eliminate all animals used for meat and for food immediately and take no other options. But I feel like in the world we live in, that's still so far away that everything we can do to help these animals suffer less is going to be beneficial for them, even when it's hurts our hearts as vegans to be like, oh, but they're still getting killed for food. I know that that's really tough, but any little step we can make is going to improve their lives too. So thank you for doing that work. I also would love for you to comment on the explosion of plant-based products, not just from companies that are exclusively selling plant-based products, but now companies that also sell animal products. What are you seeing there in that market?
It's a very, very exciting, exciting to see. And I think that, as you said, the variety that we see companies offering simply speaks for itself. It is very apparent that it's a win-win for companies when they start to offer plant-based options. You know, it broadens the consumers who are able to go in and, you know, sit at that restaurant or shop this certain brand of a product. And I think it really does speak to the fact that, again, consumers wield such tremendous power. Whether we're talking about, the expansion of vegan and plant-based menu options or the expansion of welfare policies throughout the food industry. I mean, I think that it really does speak to the fact that when consumers, you know, speak up and show companies what they're looking for and what kind of welfare that they're willing to accept from a company's policies, that companies will react to that. And also, more importantly, it becomes like sort of like a wave that builds where one company establishes a policy or sets a goal and then another one. And then, you know, soon a company will look around and say, we're the only ones who don't have this policy. We need to take action. And that's when we really start to see these policies have a very large influence throughout the industry.
Yes, this is such a powerful thing that I want my listeners to really take heed on, is that your purchase matters. You are voting with your dollars. You are what matters to these companies and what choices you make. And just like you're saying, when more companies start doing this, the ones that aren't doing it, they're going to see it affecting their bottom line. And that's highly motivating to them. So that's how we help affect these changes. And every little bit, every person who makes that choice to eat less animal products, eat more plant-based products, we're going to see that tide turning slowly. So that's really, really important. Well, let's back up a little bit because I want to hear about your vegan journey and how you came to work for Mercy for Animals.
That's a very interesting story. So My vegan story, to be honest, probably starts back when I was in college. I was taking a bunch of courses in public health. I actually minored in public health when I was in college. And I had an amazing professor who really exposed us to a lot of different ideas and ways of thinking. And she would often host documentary nights. And so one of these documentary nights, we watched Forks Over Knives. And I, previous to that, I'll be honest, I thought that being vegan was weird. I thought that it was something that like only hippies did. Like I really was like, that's not for me, like not interested. And then I watched this documentary and I was like, wow, okay, there's actually some pretty compelling evidence that eating food that comes from animals is detrimental to your health and that maybe eating more plants is good for you. And I was like, okay, like kind of interesting. Maybe I'll just like give it a Google when I'm back in my dorm room. And I did. And then, you know, of course, when you Google, you know, vegan diet, vegan recipes, you know, you find websites like Mercy for Animals and you see investigations footage. And it wasn't until I really saw the cruelty, the animal welfare side of it, just seeing the widespread suffering that happens on factory farms, that's really what made me take a step back and say, okay, this has changed the way that I look at meat. This has, you know, it doesn't look like food anymore. It looks like, you know, something really, really terrible. And so I went vegetarian pretty much like on the spot. And I remember thinking to myself, huh, okay, I'm just going to try this. If it's hard, if I don't feel good, if I'm starving, if I have no energy, I can always go back to eating meat. And it's, you know, 1 week went by and then two and then three and then four and everything was fine. And I was like, huh, I think I can do this. And then a couple years after that, a year or so after that, I decided to be fully vegan because I was like, well, you know, the dairy industry and the egg industry are definitely not, I wouldn't call them cruelty-free industries either. So decided to be fully vegan and have not looked back. It's been great. And it, you know, I did not start off my career in the animal protection space. I started in a totally unrelated field, but this really quickly became my passion and something that I really felt like it was something I wanted to spend my life working towards, because I really, really do believe that widespread industrialized factory farming is the source of so many problems in the world. And helping to create a more compassionate food system is such a worthwhile cause, in my opinion.
Such a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing it. I'm curious, before you started seeing footage of factory farming, did you consider yourself like an animal person or an animal lover? Were you that kind of person?
Yes. And that is such a funny question. And I think that's part of what contributed to that sort of, you know, we always hear the phrase cognitive dissonance when we talk about people making the connection that, you know, your chicken nugget was at one point a tiny little baby chick, you know, coming to that realization. Yeah. I mean, my family, we always had cats and dogs. I definitely considered myself an animal person. I loved animals. I still love animals. But I think that was the step back where I was like, hold on, like, how would I feel if instead of, you know, a slaughterhouse full of pigs or cows, it was like a slaughterhouse full of dogs or cats. And I was like, that does not feel good to think about that picture. And, you know, of course, I would say that my views and my understanding of the industry have definitely matured since then. But I think at the very core, it is sort of that that visceral feeling of, you know, these animals are conscious, feeling beings. And if there is any way for us to, if not eliminate, then lessen their suffering, that is worth pursuing.
Yeah. Ugh. Was there any point in your journey where you felt overwhelmed by it all and just were like feeling helpless and hopeless, disempowered?
I mean, I think that no matter what field you're working in, whether it's animal advocacy or whether you're just working in any kind of job, you're always going to have days where you feel frustrated and worn down and maybe even a little bit burnt out. I think working in the animal protection movement or any sort of social justice movement, compassion fatigue is absolutely something that comes up so much. It's something that, you know, I've been fortunate enough to work in environments where that is acknowledged and recognized. And it's something that I feel it's really important when you're working in animal protection to be cognizant of that, just so that you can sort of, you know, be aware of ways to be sustainable in your advocacy. Because that's the thing, is that if you burn out, that is not helping anybody. You know, that's certainly not helping the cause that you're working on. It's not helping yourself. And I think I came to that realization of, you know, knowing I wanted to work in this field for the long haul. And how do you do that without becoming overwhelmed? And I don't think that there's any one easy answer. It's different for everybody. But I think something that is encouraging is looking at, going back to our corporate work, all of the companies that have committed to, you know, improving their animal welfare standards, companies that you would have never thought in a million years, perhaps, that they would have, started to improve welfare standards or offer vegan options for that matter. I mean, we're really living in an incredible time where the world is changing how it views the relationship of animals in our food system. So that is what keeps me inspired and really makes me so excited to see what other change is going to happen in the coming years.
Yeah, that's beautiful. We definitely have to keep perspective and notice how far we have come, even though sometimes it feels like it's just not moving fast enough. But I'm really grateful for people like you, because I do consider this some of the hardest work. My oldest son is 17, and one evening, we somehow, you know, he's trying to decide what he wants to do with his future and what he wants to pursue. And working for an animal advocacy, you know, organization came up, and I was telling him the plethora of different things you can do. Like, they need lawyers, you know, Dr. Greger, he's a doctor. And then I told him about people that go undercover. And I think that that's got to be the hardest job ever. Like, the people that have the courage and the bravery to do undercover work, not even just because it is dangerous, but also just because you have to be right there witnessing some of the horrors that are happening in animal agriculture. It's just incredible that there's people that are willing to do that. So we need people to help animals in all different kinds of ways. And there's so many opportunities to do that advocacy. So thank you for your work. I appreciate it so much. All right, let's talk about the Count Your Chickens report. What is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll take a step back and sort of set the scene about what the Count Your Chickens report is and why it came to be. So the Count Your Chickens report is a report that examines companies' progress towards meeting their welfare goals that they have set for broiler chickens. And broiler chickens are chickens who are raised for their meat, as opposed to laying hens, which are chickens that lay eggs for the egg industry. And it sounds like such a fundamental thing, but that's actually something that I did not know before I started this work, was that those are two different kinds of chickens. So the Count Your Chickens report is essentially looking at which companies are making progress towards a set of standards that they have committed to meet, called the Better Chicken Commitment. So the Better Chicken Commitment is a set of science-backed welfare standards that are essentially the bare minimum improvements needed to meaningfully improve the welfare of broiler chickens throughout the industry. More than 200 companies throughout North America and more than 400 companies globally have committed to meeting these welfare standards for broiler chickens between the years of 2024 and 2026. So essentially, companies made these policies, started making these policies several years ago, and this report is taking a look at which companies are actually reporting progress towards these welfare standards. And I think that this is very important because, you know, it's important that companies not only establish these policies on paper, but it's so important that they show follow through and actually demonstrate, again, to their consumers, who are really the main stakeholders here, that they are really putting in the work and making the changes within their supply chain to benefit these animals. And just to speak briefly about the broiler chicken industry, because I think that, you know, oftentimes the average person who eats meat, who's walking into a grocery store or sitting down at a restaurant, may not really know what goes on behind the scenes in this industry. So first of all, the scope of the industry is truly, truly massive. Every year, 9 billion chickens are killed in the United States, 9 billion. And that is more than 16 times the number of cows, pigs, and laying hens. So it's a massive, massive industry. So when Mercy for Animals is evaluating our priorities and our corporate work, working with companies on broiler chicken policies is so critical, because one policy from one company has the potential to impact many thousands, if not millions, of lives of animals over the years. So it's extremely high priority work. You know, the majority of chickens who are bred for meat in the United States come from breeds who have a very unnaturally high rate of growth. They've actually been bred over a series of years to put on an unnatural amount of weight very quickly. And, you know, the idea is that they gain as much weight in as short of a time as they can. But this is extremely detrimental to their health and their overall well-being. Their legs often have trouble supporting the weight of their upper bodies. And as a result, they have trouble walking. They are sometimes fully immobilized. The conditions where these animals live, it's very crowded in barns. Oftentimes, they're living in their own waste. They can develop red, irritated skin, sores. Their feathers fall out in patches. Even the air is very acrid because it's soaked with the ammonia from their waste. It's really, you know, certainly there is much change and much improvement needed. And that's really what the BCC standards, where they come in, is that it establishes the minimum set of improvements that is needed to meaningfully make change for these animals.
Hey, are you kind of curious about microgreens and including microgreens in your diet, but you're not sure where to start and you're not sure how to do it? I love my Hamama microgreen grower. It's so easy, it's so convenient. So this is how it works. Basically, they send you the kit and it has this little seed quilt, okay? And then you soak the seed quilt in the water, and in a few days, you see your tiny little baby sprouts growing. And a few days after that, you can start eating them. And it's so fun. And you can tell them that you're eating them. And they're really happy that you're eating them. And your body's really happy that you're eating them. But here's the best part. Because I've told y'all before, I'm lazy. So I don't wanna have to use any mental energy that I don't need to. And they send you seed quilts every month. So you don't run out, you can change what seed quilts you want to try. So here's some examples of some of the seed quilts they have: hearty broccoli, refreshing cabbage, energizing kale, spicy daikon radish, super salad mix. You can even get wheatgrass, you can get culinary cilantro, or even hot wasabi mustard. So there's lots to choose from. They have different flavors. They're so cute and they're health promoting. So you can get a good dose of antioxidants, and it's really beautiful. I also use them for garnish when I'm making soups and salads and different bowls. You can impress your guests, but like I said, it's going to be low energy cost on your part, and it's actually not that expensive either. The other thing that I use from Hamama is a green onion growing kit, which is really cool because it can decrease your food waste. So you buy the green onions, and then the little part that has the root, the white part at the bottom, you stick it in these little holes, and then you just put the water in there and it grows, and then you can keep eating the same green onions. You just go with your little scissors and you chop it off and you put it into your food. So if you want to give it a try, you've been curious about microgreens and different ways that you can grow your own food, check out Hamama. You can find it in my show notes for a link to get 15% off, or you can go to dryami.com/shop so that you can find the link and get 15% off your first order. Happy growing! I am so happy that it's almost summer. It may seem like you're going to have lots of extra time to be lazy and spend lots of time in the kitchen, but let's face reality. Summer brings lots of traveling and spontaneous activities, and you don't want to be stuck planning meals, shopping for groceries, or laboring over a hot stove. Make life easy, like summertime, and try out Green Chef. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited process ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that make it easy to stick to a healthy living routine. Listen, you don't want to get home from your trip to an empty fridge and nothing to cook. You're tired, you're jet-lagged. The last thing you want to do is go to the grocery store. Green Chef is your summer lifestyle lifesaver. You can even take Green Chef meal kits with you to your vacation rental. Easy peasy. Find recipes for every lifestyle, including plant-based diets. Green Chef delivers quality whole foods with limited process ingredients, including low added sugar and sodium smart options. You get to choose from 80 plus flavor-packed options that allow you to take back time in your kitchen and have dinner ready within 30 minutes and lunch in 10. Try 15 plus new recipes every week. Here's the best part. Green Chef delivers everything you need to make convenient, wholesome, and delicious meals directly to your doorstep. Each meal kit includes pre-measured ingredients, as well as some produce that come already pre-chopped, and custom sauces that are pre-made in-house. They also provide the recipe cards, and the meals are very simple to make. It's a delicious, fresh, home-cooked meal without the hassle. What I love most about Green Chef is that it takes the stress out of cooking. The recipes are easy to follow and everything you need is included. So even less experienced cooks in your house can prepare a delicious home-cooked meal. We have loved using Green Chef in our household and it's perfect for any season, especially if you want fresh, home-cooked, healthy meals to put on the table. Don't let the summer vacation schedule throw you off your healthy eating lifestyle. Make it easy to stick to your healthy eating goals with Green Chef. Go to greenchef.com/IAMHUMAN50 and use code IAMHUMAN50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. That's greenchef.com/IAMHUMAN50 and use the code IAMHUMAN50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
A lot of smart people don't feel so smart when it comes to their money. So Morgan Stanley made a podcast to help. Listen to What Should I Do With My Money? To hear real people ask real questions about money and get helpful answers from experienced financial advisors.
Get everything you need for your next project today at Menards and save big money. LP SmartSide products are the number one brand of engineered wood siding. SmartSide trim and siding offers long-lasting performance and delivers the warmth and beauty of traditional wood. Save big money today at Menards and LP SmartSide products. Plus, visit Menards.com to view the weekly flyer and check out all of our great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
And certainly, I wouldn't say again that any chicken is cruelty free chicken. Certainly not. You know, that there's a reason that so many of us are vegan because, you know, we don't support eating meat in any facet. But within the industry, the BCC is a very meaningful change, and it represents a really strong elevation in the welfare for these animals.
Thank you for summarizing that. I think that a lot of people, when they think of animals being raised for food, they think of this small family farm and you have these happy chickens clucking around, walking around outside in the grass, and you have the cows grazing and everybody's happy and joyful. But really, the majority of the animals we consume in this country are coming from factory farms. So can you tell us more about factory farms and how common are they?
Yeah, factory farms are extremely common in the United States. The vast, vast majority of animals, including broiler chickens, who are raised for food in the U.S., do come from these monolithic factory farms where, you know, millions and millions of animals, live and are then sent to slaughterhouses. And just to go back to broiler chickens, when we talk about the lifespan of these animals, it is really staggering when you think about it and put it in sort of a timeline perspective, that these animals are only really permitted to live for 5 to 7 weeks before they're sent to slaughter. They're very young, but even within that short time frame, their lives are full of much suffering. Going back to the topic of the rate of growth of these animals, as I said, it has been altered throughout the course of many years to be rapid, to be unnatural. And I believe one study even said that the equivalent of the rate of growth of these chickens is having a 2-month-old human baby who weighs 600 pounds. The genetics of these animals has been very, very altered. And that really has a detrimental impact on their overall health and welfare. Certainly, the slaughter process, there's lots of welfare concerns with that as well. And the Better Chicken Commitment also advocates for a method of processing the animals that is, again, not cruelty-free, but certainly has been proven to be much more humane than the conventional method that's used in the industry.
So many people eat chicken because they think it's healthier than eating beef. Of course, we've been told a lot, don't eat red meat and, some of these other dark meats in the animal meat products. And so then they just choose chicken. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's exploded. I mean, 9 billion chickens killed per year. I can't even fathom that number. That's incredible. And the other thing, I think it's important for people that really want to see what this is like. You can look it up online. You can see what these factory farms are like, but it's not, they're in a building. Everybody's together, literally on top of each other. And one of the other things that they routinely do is control light exposure because they keep the chickens in the light so that they'll also mature faster. It does something to I think probably because it's stressful. It probably triggers cortisol, which makes them grow even faster. So there's all these things that happen in these poor little chickens' short lives that their entire life is suffering.
Yeah. And in fact, I will say 1 in 20 birds roughly does not even make it to the slaughterhouse. 1 in 20 birds dies when they're still in the barn before they're even old enough to be slaughtered, which again is just 5 to 7 weeks. So clearly this is not an environment that is particularly conducive to the health or well-being of these animals. And I think that you put it so perfectly when you said that people, when they imagine agriculture, they imagine a farm. I mean, even saying the word farm, you imagine clear blue skies, rolling green pastures, fresh open air. And that is not at all what it's like. It is usually a closed building. There's different systems of production within the broiler welfare industry, but there are common issues of welfare that are just so rampant, really on any within the standard industry practice. I mean, when I mentioned that 1 in 20 mortality rate, that's essentially baked into the business model. It's understood that a certain portion of these animals are going to suffer and die before they even make it to the slaughterhouse. So, it's the change. It's difficult to talk about, but it's the change that we're working on. And, Mercy for Animals has been a leader in this. We have been collaborating with hundreds and hundreds of companies over the years on establishing higher welfare policies, not just for broiler chickens, but for laying hens and other sorts of welfare policies. So, that is what keeps you motivated, is looking at all the work that's been accomplished and being excited about what's still to come.
Yeah. You've said many times so far in this interview that really none of this is cruelty-free, because at the end of the day, you're still exploiting animals and killing them. But whenever we talk about humane practices and people are always searching for more humane ways if they want to eat meat, in the industry as a whole, are humane practices something that's common, or is it pretty rare? Is it more common that you're going to see routine inhumane practices that are practiced normally across the board?
I mean, I hesitate to say a humane practice. I would say, you know, more humane or less cruel. But I would say that through corporate work, you know, hopefully we will see a change where these practices, these worst practices that I'm talking about, start to become less and less common, or, you know, we start to see the scales shift. And really, you know, personally for myself, you know, I am a vegan, but I can also understand that for someone looking for products that are raised with higher welfare attributes, you know, that is started, we are starting to see a shift, which is very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the best thing about doing the work that you do?
I think that the best thing about doing the work that I do is knowing that it is having an impact for animals, and knowing that by working with companies, it's giving a voice to consumers in a major way. You know, again, consumers care about animal welfare, consumers care about the environment. You know, they want to know more than ever where their food comes from. And I think that companies, you know, across the board are starting to really put a lot of effort and work into their sustainability initiatives, of course, and animal welfare initiatives as well. So I think the best thing about our work is knowing that through collaborating with companies, we're able to have an even bigger impact for animals.
What's the hardest thing about what you do?
That's a tricky one. The hardest thing is, you know, it's acknowledging the reality of the situation, you know, seeing investigation footage, thinking about the fact that these animals are suffering. But that is, in another way, it's also very motivating, because that's the reason for the work that we're doing. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword there.
Yeah. It's hard, especially if you're a very empathetic person, to watch footage. I mean, there's definitely things, even sometimes reading descriptions for me, I feel like it gets burned into my memory permanently. So, I mean, I've done episodes before talking about empathy, and I think that sometimes when people have a lot of empathy, it makes it even harder for them to acknowledge what's happening, because it's so, so painful for them. So that cognitive dissonance, you know, it just puts that block. It's almost like a protective mechanism to help protect your heart from the pain of knowing that some of these animals are suffering so much, and it's so routine. Like I said, I commend you for the work you do, and I thank you for that.
I think that you bring up a really good point about empathy, and that's why it's so helpful to have a support system and a community of people who feel a similar way to you, who are also aware of these issues, who you can talk to, who you can vent to, who you can just, you know, even laugh with, or, you know, try to find some levity, you know, at the end of a stressful day. It really is so important to have a support system. I feel like in some ways, working within the animal protection space is very helpful in that regard, because you're working on a team of people who all are animal lovers, who all really believe in the mission, and who get it, and who get that empathy can be a blessing and a curse, and they get that burnout is so easy to reach these days. I feel like previously, when I was not yet working in the movement, but was becoming very, very passionate about it, it can feel alienating, because, you know, you want to talk about this, you want to express your interests, and I'm sure we've all heard a million and one jokes about vegans by now, but it's a lot more, I'll tell you, the vegan jokes that vegans tell with it amongst themselves are way funnier than any vegan jokes that someone who's not would tell. But yeah, I think it's great to work on a team of like-minded people as well.
Yeah, you're right. Community is so important for so many things, but it's also part of the pillars of lifestyle medicine too. So just for general well-being, joy, and longevity in our lives, we do need to be deliberate about connecting with others, having those conversations, having that time with other people that makes us feel loved and connected. And it really does help decrease our stress levels. So thank you so much for that reminder. So important. What do you wish more people knew?
You know what? Actually, I think I will say, I wish that more people knew just how easy it is to, I won't say go vegan overnight, you know, even though that is some people's story, but just how easy it can be to integrate more plant-based eating habits into your routine. I think that, again, going back to before I tried being vegetarian, before I tried being vegan, I was like, it's going to be so hard. Everything I eat has animals in it. But when you take a look at how many options are out there, even things that you're already eating that are so easy to make a vegan version of, you know, you can start with one meal a day, you can start with one day a week, and you can just build from there. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. I think that's something else, is that if someone's interested in integrating more plant-based eating habits into their diet, it's not like they have to go 100% vegan overnight or else it doesn't count. I think every little bit counts, and little steps turn into big steps, and habits grow over time. And whenever someone says they're kind of interested in being vegan or kind of interested maybe in eating more plant-based options, it's just so exciting because it's like starting all, you know, it's not starting all over again, but you get to experiment, you get to try new recipes, you get to learn about new foods that you like that maybe you didn't know before. So I think that's something that I wish more people knew, because I think there is a bit of a hesitancy sometimes around starting to eat more plant-based options, or a bit of a stigma. And I just wish that more people knew that it's very easy, it's very fun, and it's nothing to be scared of.
I love that. It made me think when you were saying that, you know, when people come up to veteran vegans, plant-based eaters, and they start talking about this, we may look super calm and collected on the outside, but on the inside, we are jumping up and down and screaming in enthusiasm. So just know that we're trying to keep our composure and not be overly enthusiastic and bombard you with too much information. But yeah, seriously, but it is so exciting because I find that the longer I've been plant-based, those people at the beginning of my journey that I thought they would never ever consider this, slowly they come and they start changing. And the people that you would least expect to be interested in this way of eating and living start to get curious about it for lots of different reasons. But I don't care the reason. I just want you to eat less animals. So whatever reason motivates you, just eat less animals. That would be that would be my ploy.
I'm personally right there with you. That's how I feel as well. You know, it's a big party. Everybody's invited. If it's for the animals, if it's for your health, if it's for the environment, if it's because you find out you have a dairy allergy when you're 35 and you decide you can't have milk anymore, you know, everybody's invited. Let's come eat some vegetables together.
I love it. Well, you kind of already answered this, but maybe you have a few other tips for this. But if people aren't ready to go exclusively plant-based, they're not ready to go 100% vegan, what are some other things that they can do to impact the lives of farm animals? And maybe we can also go back to the Count Your Chickens report and how people can use that to inform their decisions.
Absolutely. Well, I'll speak first to the Count Your Chickens report, because that is something that Mercy for Animals published very recently. And we do have a website, countyourchickens.us, where people can go and read the report and also see which companies are highlighted in that report. So, you know, we were very happy and excited to highlight a number of companies who are not only making progress towards these welfare initiatives, but also publicly showing that progress to their consumers and other stakeholders. It's very exciting. However, we also did name a few companies in the report who, despite having adopted these policies years ago, have not been able to demonstrate progress publicly. Additionally, the report also mentioned several companies whose policies have been removed from their websites. And so it's not clear, you know, what's happening with those policies. So I would definitely direct your listeners to countyourchickens.us to see the full report and to learn how, you know, you can get involved in the campaign and take action, because that's really how these companies oftentimes are able to hear the voice of consumers, is when consumers speak up and say, look, we care about animal welfare. You made a commitment to improve these welfare standards for chickens, and it's very important that's something that you follow through on. So yes, if someone is not ready to go 100% vegan, I don't know if there's a better euphemism for saying cold turkey, maybe cold cold tofu. Cold tofu. If someone's not ready to say they're going to go cold tofu. Yeah, I think that, and I don't know, I wish I could give credit to the person who told me this, but I do not remember who it was. So I'll just say this is not my idea, but someone mentioned, you know, if you go into your kitchen right now and you look at what's in your refrigerator, what's in your cabinets, what's in your freezer, I bet that at least half, if not more of it, is probably already going to be vegan. I mean, so many things that we eat every single day are vegan foods, even if they're very basic, you know, any kind of fruit and veggie, any kind of lentil, any kind of grain, you know, any most seasonings like mustard and ketchup and even, you know, junk foods like potato chips and
Oreos,
even popcorn. Yeah. Doritos. Like there's lots and lots of things that we already eat every day that are quote unquote vegan foods that you may not necessarily, you know, not every vegan dinner needs to be a gourmet, you know, veganized bolognese, or it can be, and that's great. But, you know, a vegan dinner can also just be rice and beans and a salad, or, you know, veggie burgers and some, you know, a stir fry that you can make in 15 minutes.
Do you love Veggie Doctor Radio, but you're sick of listening to ads? Join the Plantscription. The Plantscription is a monthly membership where you have access to ad-free episodes of Veggie Doctor Radio every week. But that's not all. You also have access to a monthly live Q&A with me and a monthly live book club. You also get access to writings and musings and free giveaways. It is such a great deal. Right now, it's only $5 a month to join the Plantscription. If you want to join, go to plantscription.substack.com or go to the show notes to follow the link. Join the Plantscription today and join me in this plantastic community.
I'm a newer mom. I have a 10-month-old, not a brand new mom, but a newer mom. And something that my pediatrician told me once was, you know, if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work. So if it comes to sleeping arrangements or, you know, any scheduling, anything, if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work. So I would say that piece of advice can also apply to being vegan. If it's not working for you, it doesn't work. So if you're not the kind of person who wants to eat kale smoothies every morning, even though that's very, very good for you and probably a lovely thing to do, you know, you can have toast or, you know, with peanut butter on it, or, you know, a frozen breakfast burrito from a vegan brand. I mean, there's a million different ways to start experimenting. So find something that works for you and stick to it, and it'll become so integrated into your routine before you know it.
I love that. And that's so true, because if you aren't able to find an approach that you're comfortable with, it's not going to be sustainable. You know, you may have these images of what you want to be like, but if that doesn't fit within your lifestyle and what you have available to you right now, then you're not there yet. So start where you're at and then move from there. Make it something that's sustainable. That's how I started. Like, I didn't know anything about veganism and I was just doing an experiment, but I did exactly what you said. I was having toast with peanut butter for breakfast and rice and beans for lunch and plain spaghetti with marinara at dinner. Like, those were the things I knew. Okay, it doesn't have any animal products. That's how I started. And then I was just tuning in and paying attention. Okay, how am I feeling now? How am I feeling now? You know? And by the end of those 30 days, I was like, I feel amazing. I'm going to continue this. This is really great. So thank you for those tips. Okay, I would love to know how listeners can connect with Mercy for Animals and support the organization. You gave us the website for the Count Your Chickens report. Thank you. But if they want to learn more about Mercy for Animals, donate, become a monthly donor, how can they do that?
Absolutely. So everything can be found on mercyforanimals.org. We have so many ways that you can get involved. You can take action with our corporate campaigns and let companies hear your voice and know that you want to see improvements for farmed animal welfare, that you want to see more plant-based menu options. You can also view our corporate reports on that website. You can view investigation footage. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Mercy for Animals. And you can sign up for our email lists so you can always stay up to date on what we're doing. And yeah, we would love to have you.
And I chose Mercy for Animals for my Amazon Smile account. And, you know, I don't want to make myself look bad here, but I use Amazon a lot. So I feel like I'm contributing a lot to Mercy for Animals just because of my shopping addiction. Don't talk to my husband about this. But that's something you can do too, is you can go to your Smile Amazon account and you can select Mercy for Animals as one of the organizations that you can support with the donations there.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so congratulations for being a mom, by the way. And so my last question actually has to do with children. So leave us with your number one tip for parents wishing to raise children that make compassionate food choices.
Well, as I mentioned, my baby is 10 months old, so he, I don't know how many food choices he's making. It's more just whatever I try to feed to him. But I will say, you know, I'm a bit of a newbie mom. Maybe I'll check back in a year or so once I have a little more experience under my belt. But it is so interesting that, you know, typically babies will start to eat solid foods somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 months. And at least in the case of my baby, he has really gravitated towards so many plant-based foods. I mean, he has a huge sweet tooth. He seems to have been born with a sweet tooth. Any kind of fruit that you put in front of him, he is just over the moon about. He, speaking of, you know, pasta with marinara sauce, you know, he'll just dig his little fists into the spaghetti and smear the sauce all over his face. You know, it seems to be second nature to gravitate towards plant-based eating options. So I don't know if I have any advice. I would say, you know, offer them a variety of foods. And also, I think that it's so funny. Literally earlier today, I feel like I was Googling like picky eater baby, like how to fix it. And I saw something that said that oftentimes it can take around 10 times or so to when you offer a new food to a kid for them to get interested in it and to want to eat it. I'm sure you know far, far more about that phenomenon than myself. But that's something that was encouraging. It's like, okay, if he doesn't like broccoli the first time around, maybe he'll like it the 10th time around and we'll go yes. from there.
And actually it's closer to 15 to 25 times.
Wow.
And I wrote a book on this subject, so I will mail you a copy so you can have it. It'll help you. But yeah, a lot of those behaviors are just part of childhood. And all babies are born with a sweet tooth because milk is sweet. And so we need to like that in order to survive. So if babies were like born and they're like, oh, this is too sweet for me. I'm sorry. I can't eat this. They would not live very long. So yeah, milk is very sweet. So we, as humans, that's one of the reasons we like sweets so much, is because literally we've been having sweets since the day we were born. So you have noticed a phenomenon that is true across humans. Well, Jennifer, this has been such an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and telling us about Mercy for Animals and also about the Count Your Chickens report. We'll make sure we put all the links in the show notes. I hope that my listeners will go download the report, share it with your friends and families, especially if they're still eating chicken. Maybe remind them that there's 9 billion chickens killed per year, and that's a lot. And go to Mercy for Animals and consider supporting them because they're doing amazing, amazing work. Jennifer, again, thank you so much. And I hope that you have a plantastic day.
Thank you. This was so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Wow, y'all. I'm so glad I brought Jennifer on the show to talk about this important work that Mercy for Animals is doing. Here are my key takeaways. Consumer decisions matter. Vote with your wallet. And that matters in all things, but definitely in this area. Number two, broiler chickens suffer so much and live short, miserable lives. 9 billion chickens killed per year. That's a lot. If you still choose to eat chickens, then download the report and change your purchasing habits based upon what the report shows. Okay, so that Count Your Chickens report, link is in the show notes. Download it so that you can see which companies are doing better at meeting some of these standards. Factory farms are not idyllic family farms. They are massive, industrial. They cause horrid conditions for the animals, for the workers, and for the environment. If you want to learn a little bit more about this, I talked about it in episode 198 called Nourishing from Within, where I talk about environmental racism. I get a lot into factory farms and what they are and what problems they're causing. Eat more plants, eat less animals. You can do it. You don't have to go 100%. Even if you go in a stepwise fashion, little by little, replace your dairy with plant-based milk. There's so many options. Start eating more beans. That's always going to be great because remember, fiber. So you can do it little by little, even if you don't feel like you can do it overnight. And finally, check out Mercy for Animals and find other organizations that you can support that's doing this important advocacy work. Just like I said in this episode, there's some things that I would never be able to do. Like, it would be too difficult for me. I don't think mentally and emotionally I would have the capacity to manage my thoughts enough to do things like undercover work and to do some of this work day in and day out. There's people who are willing to do it, who are energized to do it, but we have to support these organizations. So advocate by donating and check out Mercy for Animals and the work that they're doing. Thank you so much, veggie lovers, for listening to this episode. If this resonates with you, let me know. Let me know if you like this kind of episode and you want to learn a little bit more about the other side of eating a plant-based vegan diet. I hope that you have a very plantastic day. Hey, veggie lover, I hope that you loved today's episode. Will you take a second and do me a huge favor? Please subscribe to my podcast so that you never miss an episode. You're the reason I'm here, and I want to share it all with you. Thank you for listening and have a plantastic day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big this summer with great deals, all in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice value packs of T-bone steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon, limit 5. Then buy one, get one free on select varieties of Entenmann's, Wonder Bread, or Vita Coco Water, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.